The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. We've got something special going on today, and for the rest of the month, we're going to be celebrating Black filmmakers in February for Black History Month. And we're starting off today with 1972's God of Thunder, directed by Simbene Usmane. But before we get to that, we've got a special guest with us, if he wants to introduce himself.
Hey, how y'all doing? I'm Dr. Jameson, and I teach African American Studies at UAB.
All right. So we've got a real guest on this podcast for the second time ever. It's not just a friend, but someone who actually has knowledge in a particular
field of
study.
Moving up in the world.
Hello.
Yeah. This is going to be the podcast that breaks us into the big time. Thanks, Dr. Jameson.
We're so legit now.
We'll see.
So before we get into that, let's do some heralds and announcements. If anyone has that, I know that Patrick's been rewatching a bunch of films recently. Would you like to do a herald or denouncement for your rewatches?
I'm trying to decide if I want to do herald or denouncement.
I'm going to do a denouncement. Basil, okay. Do you have what are you doing, a herald or a denouncement or neither?
I'm a herald.
Okay.
All right. So, well, I'll do a herald. I'm going to herald Batman Returns. I think it's the best Batman movie, and I think it has a really strong feminist reading with the character of Catwoman. I think that Michelle Pfeiffer does a really badass job in that role. And I'm sad that character kind of got scratched from the rest of the Batman oeuvre from that point until the last Christopher Nolan Batman, which she wasn't in very much, and that movie was really awful anyway. So, yeah.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but it's my favorite Tim Burton movie.
Yeah,
based off my memory.
I'm willing to put that label upon it as well. It's probably the best coalescing.
Better than
Pee-wee. That's a good.
Yeah. I haven't seen.
I think Pee-wee is on my rewatch list. So yeah, I think Pee-wee is on my rewatch list because I remember just loving that show as a kid, and that movie scared me. I remember that movie like terrifying me as a kid. So. That'll be interesting.
I really love the tequila scene in Pee-wee, but about nothing else.
The tequila scene is great. The Large Marge scene is like legendarily terrifying. But yeah, Batman Returns, good one.
Basil?
I'm going to herald another sort of childhood rewatch. I recently saw Fast Times at Ridgemont High for the first time since I was like 17 or 18, and I was surprised how much I liked it. I thought it... got at like the strange anxieties of being a teenager, probably unlike any movie that I've ever seen. And it also does a really good job of presenting a whole bunch of like vignettes of characters and ongoing stories without sort of succumbing to the idea that you have to like tie them all up neatly and have them all arrange with each other. The movie just kind of ends, and it does a really good job of having characters do shitty things to each other without like having the characters be shitty people. Like, you could be a good person and still like do a really shitty thing, and I think that's a cool thing that is rarely done in Hollywood movies these days. So
awesome. Rock. I'm definitely gonna rewatch it because of you, which I wasn't planning on before. Did you see anything this week, Dr. Jameson?
No.
Okay, nothing from Dr. Jameson. I'm going to kick off Black History Month in really embarrassing style, and I'm going to denounce the movie Selma. which,
heresy.
Yeah, I was really hoping would be really good, and I was really excited for it because I was like, this is an Oscar movie, but it's directed by a black female director. That means it's going to have something, you know, like angry about it. But man, that movie was so soft. And it was like nothing controversial or like it basically congratulates people on not being as racist as they used to be and little else. So I was pretty let down by that movie.
Oh, ask questions.
Sure. If you want to talk about something, did you see it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So what do you think about how she tried to show the tension between LBJ and Dr. King? And because a lot of times people put Obama as like the extension of like this Dr. King legacy, mm-hmm. when really he's not, because Dr. King challenged and tried to push presidents to pass certain types of legislature. So what about how she showed that?
I would say the LBJ storyline is the one with the most like obvious arc, and in that way kind of works. But okay. I also think that he kind of serves as like a background way of giving white audiences an arc to follow themselves.
Okay.
Like
okay.
the fact that he, you know, endorses the Voting Rights Act at the end of the movie is a way for white people to champion themselves for how far they've come.
Okay. Okay.
In a way that it's just like, if this movie had come out like a year ago, I probably might have tolerated it more, but coming out like right now, you know, right around Ferguson, like mm-hmm. given this sort of platform to say something about police brutality and making, you know, it very clear that no one who watches this film is going to identify with the police in it at all.
Right.
And that everyone's just going to be like, it's a good thing we're past that, and not see the parallels between, you know, Eric Garner and Mike Brown and mm-hmm. what happened in Selma. The fact that that's just completely skipped over would pretty much bummed me out hard.
Okay, I see that. Okay. And what about even the violent confrontations with the police? Like, a lot of times people think about non-violent direct action, and they think about, you know, it was rough, but like actually showing that type of violence for people who don't understand that being non-violent meant dealing with violence.
I appreciated that, and the thing that I probably liked most about the movie is that I didn't know in history that the Selma March was something that like started and stopped multiple times mm-hmm. before it right. did the successful one, and I thought that was a good part of the movie. I didn't hate the movie, I just didn't like it. And
high expectations for it.
Yeah, and I appreciated those scenes as being like you know, like violent scenes that worked in making me, you know, mm-hmm. feel really mm-hmm. bad about what happened.
Right.
But it, you know, if I'm going to see a race movie, I pretty much want it to confront me about my own racism.
Okay.
Like,
yeah. And it left that window to be like, yeah. that was them, or that's the bad people, the bad white yeah. people down south.
Yeah.
And that is right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
There was a very clear divide between the bad white people and the good white people in this right. movie, in a way that anyone who's watching it will feel comfortable identifying themselves with the good mm-hmm. white people if they want to, and therefore not asking themselves about their own racism.
I see that. Okay.
mm-hmm. All right, Dr. Jameson, already bringing it on the podcast.
Yeah. Let's. Yeah, I'm loving the dialogue that we have going right now.
Okay, so now to get into the movie itself, we're going to be discussing God of Thunder, which was Patrick's pick. So if you want to give us a little plot description, Patrick.
I will. So the plot of God of Thunder is, it starts off showing the sort of young men from this village, the Diola village in Senegal. They are sort of returning to the village, and they are being kind of railroaded by these soldiers who I guess have been sort of They're kind of the French military, although they're made up of Senegalese people. But they're like kidnapping these guys and sort of taking them off to be in World War II. That whole scene happens, and then we move into another conflict between the French military and the people in the Diola village, where the people in the village hide all their rice. They're supposed to give over their rice to the French military, and they don't do it. So the French come in and occupy the village, kidnap all the women, and the movie is about the village sort of fighting back against the French military for doing this and trying to sort of maintain their way of life while at the same time struggling against the military that's occupying them.
I think that was one of our better plot descriptions. I was really impressed by how clear and succinct that was, and also all the historical background that you gave in it. I actually usually think our plot description is one of the weaker parts of our podcast.
Sometimes I think we could cut it out completely, yeah. But it's fun to try.
Some of us, myself included, tend to like highlight things that we liked as opposed to really actually sum up the plot.
Yeah.
It's like, I'll talk for 5 minutes about a scene that lasted 20 seconds.
Yeah, I try to be as broad as possible with my plot descriptions because we can get to the other stuff later. Like, we can get into more detail. Because when you start getting into details, you'll have to go back and explain, like, why that detail makes sense earlier. And you're just going back through the whole movie, scene by scene. But then,
Basil?
I like this movie. I thought, as far as World War II movies, it's about the most different perspective that I've ever seen. And, I mean, if you can even really call it a World War II movie, but I really like the way that it sort of depicts the kind of colonialist oppression that people were facing, and doesn't feel like a period film. Like, it was shot in the 70s and obviously takes place in the 40s, but it doesn't really have the kind of beats that I would expect from a period film, you know, made in Hollywood or something like that. So, I liked it.
Dr. Jameson?
Yeah, I liked it. And I don't know, I'm kind of a nerd and want to make sure I make my right points. So I wrote down a few things that stood out to me.
Basil takes notes too.
Okay, all right, so yeah. So my first point is I liked how, like, as a World War II movie, but how it showed that the people some of the people were clear that it was the white man's war. And when it says they were forced to fight, but yet when the French commander got up there and started talking, he started talking about how you have all volunteered. So that was interesting to me, this idea that you know about Africans fighting in war for Europeans and for people they were colonized by, but to see a movie deal with that whole process and what their mind state was like. Because when you look at African-American history, there's this thing called the Double V program, and they were like victory at home and victory abroad. So with that, you hear African-Americans dealing with that conflict, but I never thought about how that worked out with the continental Africans. My second one is I like how they looked at the gathering of the elders and the role of the elders. And one of the things the elders always had to do with was they were questioning the gods and dealing with the silence of the gods. And in my mind, it had to deal with like tradition versus this whole new modern thing that was coming about as you meet the Western world. And so if you start to question your gods, in essence, you're questioning your own culture. So I think that was at the core. How do we move on and deal with our present day reality, but still hold on to these traditions, these cultures with dealing without gods? The next one definitely with the colonialism. And so you would see the use of Africans in oppressing or getting other Africans involved in fighting in the war. You see the French flag in the songs. And also was interesting, when the French, when they colonized people, they had this thing like called assimilation. So they would do this thing where they would make people think they were actually French. If you look at like Martinique and some parts in the Caribbean. So when they said things like our fathers, as if they were like the same the same people. So that was interesting to me. There was one more with that. Oh, and then looking at the interaction between culture, the role of the sergeant who was doing the translating. And to me, that interaction was interesting because the French, they thought that they said they knew these savages and knew these barbaric people. But yet, they always had to call the sergeant over to translate. And then anytime the drum came on, that was clear. I don't know what those Africans are talking about. So they were like, what's this drum saying? What are they saying now? So I thought that was interesting how they thought they knew how to handle them, but actually they didn't know the culture.
All right, let's save some of those.
I'm not supposed to do this?
It's okay. Okay. Yeah, normally we do something like a little brief here, and we'll get a little more detailed later.
I'm sorry, I'm going off. Okay, yeah, I'll wait.
And then we just sort of do like a free-flowing thing.
Yes, I thought it was good.
I saw you had three, I was like, oh, three's good, three's fine. But then I saw a second page, and I was like, uh-oh, let's hold
on
here.
It's only one more.
Yeah, I like
somebody stop him.
I like that somebody came to this podcast prepared for once.
Basil comes prepared. That's, it's just the
that's
rest
true.
Of us.
That's
schmucks.
True. We're just a bunch of schmucks.
You should see my notes for a lot. They're hilariously bad. I think one of my notes was cat's exclamation point. Anyways, I like this movie too. In fact, I would say that I liked it a lot. It's really only held back by what you think a film of this type would be held back by, which is a little bit of acting awkwardness, a little bit of cinematography awkwardness, which is, you know, nothing you can really do about that. I liked a lot of the things that Dr. Jameson pointed out about it. I'll mention one film thing that I was surprised I liked about it. I actually liked the sound and the sound editing a lot, even though it kind of sounds bad, like out of the context of the film. Like, things are louder than they're supposed to be, and certain things don't, like, blend in sound-wise. It's like there's not very much sound going on, and then, like, really loud oars going through water. But it actually worked for me in a, like, harsh, discomforting way. So
I also enjoyed that about it. And I really did like this movie. I've seen a few of... I want to talk very quickly about how the director's name is supposed to be said, because I've always heard him called Usman Sambin, but Sambene, oh, yeah. Usmane sounds correct as well. So I guess it depends on... what part of the world you're saying it in, I guess what language you're speaking.
I'm not sure. I've only read it and then guessed how it was said. Okay. But I also noticed just that in the movie, it says his last name first, and I thought maybe in Senegal you're supposed to say the last name first, like in Japan.
That might also be true, yeah. Because I have the same thing with Junho Bong, because sometimes he's called Bong Junho, and I'm like, which is it? But I've always called him Usman Sambin, but yeah. We can call him Sambene Usman if we want to do that too. I
apologize.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Whoever listens to this podcast.
for
this is the kind of deep research you get on Loose Cannons.
I thought this movie had a lot of his trademarks, and he more so than some of his. I think it's an earlier film. The movie Mondabi, I can't remember if that one is earlier or not, but I remember watching that one and thinking he's not quite developed as much in this movie, and in this one he looks like he's closer to making the movie like Hala, where it's a very like biting satire, and I think his humor comes out in this movie too at certain times. And that's what I liked about it, is that it did seem to have a sense of humor about the kind of absurd things that were happening in this, like where you get the French sort of changing leaders midstream. So they go and tear down all these posters of Pétain, and they're putting up all the ones of De Gaulle. And then they have this long argument about why a two-star general is better than a seven-star marshal. it's all these like very absurd conversations. And some of the stuff with the gods is kind of absurd as well. The one where the guy's like... I don't know if you would call it a hallucination he has right before he dies, where he has this very long conversation with the gods about, you know, why their lives are sacred as well as the gods. But I thought that he did a good job of bringing some humor to it as well, which a movie like this could be all doom and gloom, but not with him. I think he's a much more capable director, and he has a very even hand in that sort of matter. So I really did enjoy it. From that aspect as well.
Yeah, I thought there are definitely a lot of funny parts. Another part that stuck out to me is when they're like walking the dead chief, and then one of the other elders like keeps stopping them to like continue what he's trying to say, and he's like, no, stand back. I gotta finish what I'm saying. I didn't have anything like
that's it. Okay.
Analytical to say about it, just that it made me laugh a lot.
Yeah, kind of building off what Patrick was saying, and one of the things that I like most about this director is the idea that he usually has like one theme that's right at the surface that people would be like, oh, he's on the nose, he's not subtle, he's just saying this one thing like really outright. But those people aren't paying attention to the fact that there are also like 10 more themes underneath that going at the same time. In fact, it's almost like, I don't know how to describe it exactly, but it's like the one theme that he's yelling has all these subtle points to it that if you're only paying attention to the way in which he's saying, like, in this case, colonialism was bad, then you're not paying attention to all the interesting things. Like, I thought the God scene was really interesting, the one that you brought up, because what I liked most about it is the idea that he's arguing with the gods who are in front of him that they don't exist. He's like, you don't exist. He's like, if you did, you would help me. And right, they're like, right. And it's like, how can you argue with something that it doesn't exist? It's right there in front of you. And I thought that was like a really nuanced way to talk about his connection to like older culture and religion and stuff like that. I feel like it comes up in Mulatte as well, the idea that he has like a deep respect for it, but he also at the same time like recognizes some of the things about it that just don't work for him anymore.
Can we ask, at that point, was he already dead?
Yeah, I think he was dead.
So then
that was like a transitionary
place. Was he making his transition to the spirit world, or was he already already transitioned?
Yeah, I think they say in there like you will die mm-hmm. because you've stopped believing in us or something like that. So it's like
right.
It's almost like his choice, like whether he lives or dies, because it's like, you know, the gods are sort of like appease us and we'll let you live, but he's like, no, I can't overlook that you've been silent for so long and all this stuff. So I guess he sort of chooses to die, and he's like, fine, whatever, I'm going to die.
That was a spiritual death that he was talking about. Like, they were mm-hmm. like, do you want to go, would the Senegalese be Ifa, what we were talking about? Would that be something else?
No, that's just the Yoruba.
Okay.
Yeah, but it would still have, they would call them different things, but it would still have, like, ancestors, orishas, but it was the same type of structure.
The idea of heaven as home, though?
Yes.
That would still be, mm-hmm. yeah. And, like, the idea that he's not going home, because he doesn't want to believe in the gods anymore.
Yeah, but then that's interesting too, this idea that the reason that they're experiencing what they're experiencing is because they've turned their back on the gods, mm-hmm. that they turned their backs on them. So it's like, it's not happening because of any political thing, or it's not happening because you have arrows and they have weapons, they have guns, you know, it's not happening because of that, it's happening because of must be some spiritual reason for why this political act is happening. And I think that's trying to show some of the ways that, I guess you could say, traditional African spirituality can go wrong or have some bad impacts if you don't make that type of political connection. As compared to what he said, what was his saying when he said that every man should die and live by the spear. Yeah.
Yeah, with his spear in his hand. Yeah, with his spear in his hand. That's what he, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of the other things I thought about that was maybe the idea that he was also suggesting that, like, the way that victims are often encouraged to blame themselves for their own victimization. Mm-hmm. Like, if we kept believing in the gods, like, France wouldn't have invaded us, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought there was a kind of funny circular logic to the gods. He was like, why didn't you help? And then they're like, we're the gods. And he's like, giving away our rice is sacred. And he's like, you've betrayed us. And I was like, wait, what are they talking about? Where did he betray them until now when he's questioning them? It was like he believed in them up until the moment when he was like, why didn't you help? And they're like,
right.
Oh, if you're going to question us, you're done.
Right.
Yeah, I was actually... Yeah, a little more on the cynical side about mm-hmm. the representation of the gods. I think I thought the movie was kind of saying that relying too much on those higher powers will kind of blind you from what's really going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
And so in this case, it's almost like they could have like fought back sooner if they hadn't gone to like wait on the gods to give them an answer for it,
mm-hmm.
because he keeps saying that where were the gods when our boys were stolen or when our village was burned the first time, like, we've been waiting on the gods this whole time, we haven't done anything about it, and more bad mm-hmm. stuff just keeps happening because we just wait on them and we don't do anything for ourselves. So I thought it was kind of being cynical in that way, like questioning, just like the higher order of things. And I also thought he was connecting that with the way that the soldiers behave as well, without kind of questioning the higher authority. Like they just sort of follow. There's a scene where one of the soldiers is like looking at one of the posters and reading about Marshal Pétain, and he's saying, Pétain rules France. Well, I guess he rules me too. You know, just kind of like unquestioning, like, well, I guess he's in charge of me too.
But I thought that was interesting too, because he was like, I don't know this dude. But yeah, he's supposed to be in charge of Anchorman. Like, and he's in charge. So he, and for him to be the ruler, then him just start, he's in charge of me.
Yeah.
My mama. Everything. Dang. You know, like, I didn't know this, but okay. So yeah, that was wild to me.
Yeah.
Oh, can I do one more? Can I, one more thing with the gods?
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I don't know, when you think, look at some of like the like literature, like of like during the 1950s, 1960s, some of these African writers, and them trying to make that balance between the tradition and I guess what's going on in modern times. Then this idea that what is it, those things in our past, in the African past that you can bring with you that are relevant, you keep those, but those things that aren't, then you have to throw those away. But in throwing them away, then that's why he was dead, because if you give up, if you give up the gods, then you're giving up your cultural self, mm-hmm. or might be perceived as that. And so I think it was this idea of questioning that as well. But also reminded me of this African leader, Amilcar Cabral, when they were fighting against the Portuguese, and he was telling people they had like these amulets and these charms, and that was supposed to protect them. And he was saying that, yeah, you can wear that when you go out in the field, but you also need to know how to fire your weapon. And that's like a blending of both of those together. Like, this is my spiritual strength, but understand when that bullet comes that that's going to kill you. It's not going to protect you from that. So yeah, you have to be able to blend those together.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I definitely didn't think that the director was saying to like throw the gods away.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like there was a lot of, I guess, double consciousness in that scene. Mm-hmm. The idea of being like, okay, I want to keep this stuff, but like, hey, you need to pay attention to all this other stuff. You can't just ignore it for how things were in the past,
right.
And you have to figure out how to work in this different world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And you know, that goes with what you were saying earlier, that there's, you know, the big theme on top, but then there's all these other themes flying around
mm-hmm.
underneath that. And yeah, he's a very layered filmmaker. I also like his portrayal of the women as kind of
yeah.
this like
mm-hmm.
really
mm-hmm.
strong, unified unit.
I felt like he was saying something about women being able to do things better than men. Most of the men spend the movie talking with each
yeah.
other or talking at each other. And like the women are the ones who are like getting the rice from the fields.
Right.
And then they're all taken and then they immediately just start singing.
Mm-hmm.
And then
right.
as soon as that person is shot, they immediately just get up and run away as soon
yeah.
as a serious thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like for most of the film, the men are like hiding or talking or arguing with each other.
Yeah.
Right.
And the men are all divided. There's this very divided front with the men, whereas the women are all, you know, they're all unified. They're all kind of strong together, and they end up being the ones who, it's like they say that you need women for a funeral, because
mm-hmm.
they're the ones who sort of drive the ceremony. Like they,
mm-hmm.
it
mm-hmm.
doesn't really happen until they show up, and like do it properly, and the men are just kind of like, you know, just squabbling the whole time,
mm-hmm.
just arguing.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's a bunch of comments about like sort of male insecurity, where the men keep talking about, if we give our rice back, we'll be humiliated in front of our wives.
Yeah.
Like,
now we'll starve.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
It's not the most important thing.
Yeah. And there's also a scene early in the film where the French soldiers are making that old man sit out in the sun. Kabebe,
mm-hmm.
I think is his name. And they're like, you have to sit out in the sun until your son returns to the village, something like that. And the women immediately leave and go find the son so he'll come back, and so the old man can be spared. It's
right.
like they're the ones who take action and
mm-hmm.
make things
that
happen.
That was something that I was wondering if I missed about the movie. Was the son one of the soldiers who came back?
He's the sergeant. He's
yeah,
the translator, right?
Okay, that's what I thought.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It was a little hard to tell with the subtitles and with
okay.
the copy that we watched, but that was kind of my assumption.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just mention it pretty briefly, like an offhanded comment, like, oh, he's from this town, so he'll know stuff, and they try to get
yeah.
him to tell
that's,
them more.
That's right, yeah. They do say that in the office earlier when the two French guys are talking in the office.
Do you want to yeah. throw down on your fourth point now?
Well, we kind of hit on it, yeah. My fourth one was, I like how he looked at these different forms of resistance. Like, Africans didn't just sit there and let Europeans come in and colonize them. And so the women was a major one, too. And with them, y'all hit on a lot of points, but I like how they use the singing as, like, a form of resistance. So, like, something would happen, and then they would immediately start singing to the point that they told them, just be quiet. You know, stop singing, don't sing anymore. And I was trying to make these parallels, and it reminded me of even, you know, you didn't like Selma, but within the Civil Rights Movement, when they would have like these jail ends, mm-hmm. and they would just keep singing, and all the guards would be like, how are they singing? We've just beat them down, they're locked up, and they're still singing, expressing like that human emotion. So I liked how the women kept that going, and it was used like as a form of resistance, so.
To cover my ass a little bit, I should point out that I'm marching in Selma this year for the, whatever, 50th or 51st anniversary.
Right.
So I think that's better than me liking the movie.
Yeah. So nobody likes it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
No.
That was my fault. I tried to make a diasporic connection between the singing and then I got it. Yeah.
No, I like it. In fact, actually, I would make another connection to say, it's not a totally relevant point, but like a lot of racist white people use slave spirituals to point out that slaves were happy on the farm when they were actually often used to communicate mm-hmm. rebellion plans and stuff like that.
Right.
The fact that slave spirituals were not well known to the white owners, but well known to any historian, that it was often a way to communicate mm-hmm. like what's going to happen next, or like you know, maybe your child was taken away from you, and it was like a way to tell, you know, the mom where their child had gone,
mm-hmm.
things like that. Right. There was a well-known rebellion communication technique, and white people will say that they were happy, they sang all the time, because they're idiots.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, boy. So did you have another point that you wanted to hit on?
I mean, you can expand on any of those, by the way, if you want to.
It's totally...
I'm good. Because my last one kind of ties in with the final scene, just like the importance of what the rights meant, like as far as to the culture. And to mm-hmm. give up the rights also meant like to not just them being ashamed in front of the women, but as the culture itself, to give up the rights would mean to give up part of their culture, to give up that expression of that culture expression of who they are based on how sacred that the rights was to that culture. So I wanted to bring that up and see what y'all thought about that, as far as like you saying these different layers. What different things did the rights actually mean if we look at it from outside of just the men trying to be being weak and having to give it up?
I mean I think it's kind of a stand-in for the prosperity of the people. It's okay. Sort of like the French just coming in and taking away all their prosperity. You know, there's an obvious, I guess, monetary value to mm-hmm. what they're taking, because that's why the French need it, because they need food for the war. And so it's, you know, the French taking what they have to fuel their own, I guess, their white men's war, as it were,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
as they say in the film.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting in the scene when after the chief dies, the French commander shows up and is all, oh, your chief was a great chief, I knew him, and, you know, he would have been... and basically, he kind of uses it as a weird political tool to be like, and hey, would you mind giving us that rice now that we talked about? And then as soon as they resist, he's like, you know, I could burn your village down.
Yeah.
Like, it just immediately turns to this, like, super hostile threats instead of, like... We were so chummy just a second ago.
Right.
Yeah. It's like that scene in Birdman that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Where Michael Keaton tries to be chummy with the critic, and then she's mean to him, and then he immediately goes crazy. I agree with Dr. Jameson that there's a cultural aspect to the rice, and that like the way that the film builds up what the rice means is that it ends up being like a really nice literalization of colonialism in itself, that you know, for the French, it's just monetary and mm-hmm. it's just, you know, fiduciary. And that's the only reason why they care about it and why they want it. And they don't even notice that, like, there are other things that they probably would have been willing to give up that weren't the rice mm-hmm. because there's not a cultural, mm-hmm. you know, artifacts with it. And so, you know, that's part of the assimilation, part of the colonialization. Right. It's like they didn't just lose their resources. They lost a piece of, like, what defines them as who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that ties in with the ending.
Yeah.
Yes. So, what do y'all think about the ending? I have my own thoughts, but I don't know if I'm seeing what I want to see and adding on. So, what do y'all think about that ending scene?
Yeah, I think that it's something that comes up again in, or it actually happens in an earlier Sam Bene film. That's a film called Le Noir Day. which I believe is usually translated as Black Girl, but it's about this girl who goes to be a governess for a French family, and as her form of protest against what the family puts her through, like, she kills herself. And I see the sort of the act of dying as like this ultimate act of protest, where it's like, you can't use me anymore. I'm dead. I'm gone on to the other world. Like, I'm completely against you. You can't use my body for any of your means anymore. So I kind of saw it as that. I'm not sure if there's a significance to that in Senegalese culture, if that's like a religious thing or what, but that's kind of the way I see the, when he does that at the end of his movies, where he has a character sacrifice themselves so that they can't be used by the colonial powers anymore.
Yeah, I mean, building off that, I guess that was sort of similar to my interpretation, which is just that, and kind of what Dr. Jameson was saying, which is like that the at that point physical death seems preferable to the cultural death that they would experience if they took the rice all the way to the and gave it back to them.
Yeah, I mean, because this guy, he's from Kenya, but Ngugi has this piece where he talks about the cultural bomb. And when you want to destroy people, he says you drop a cultural bomb on them. And in that piece right there, in that ending scene, to me, it seems like they like gathered together to do what they do culturally. We saw the strength of the women and the boy, and even like the dances they were doing were like, even though it was a mourning for the funeral, it was still like these warrior type resistant dances. And I think they died, but they died saying, this is who we are. And you haven't dropped that cultural bomb on us. And we're still, even though you're about to kill us, we're still here. This is who we are. And that's why I love that scene.
I love the kid pointing the gun at the sky. It's part of the funeral dance. There was something really awesome about that being like, we're not going to take your shit.
And in that same sequence, the kid also points the gun at the camera, and I was like, whoa, this is like a legitimately threatening, like, political... Yeah. Like, I don't know. I feel like, you know, I've seen The Great Train Robbery, and to me, like, a guy just pointing a gun at the camera in that way, it just seems silly. But in this moment, I was like, this is the first time I think I've seen, like, a gun pointed at the camera where I'm like, whoa, this is strong.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's going to shoot it. I'm like he's going to shoot the gun, and then that's going to give them excuse or reason, like, to just stop, even though they end up firing on people anyway. But yeah, I thought he was actually going, you know.
I definitely thought one point about the ending that no one mentioned that's important is that it's black people shooting black people. And how Simbane feels about that, and like the idea that, at least of the two movies that I've seen most recently of his, about how they're about how white colonialism has created conflict within the tribe itself, and the idea that they've been split by those who are completely willing to, I guess, sell themselves out in a way, and those who will.
Yeah,
that's a good point, because maybe and y'all can remember, maybe there are a few scenes, but for the most part, it's like the French colonial, like, shoot them, or go do that, go get
there's
such.
Very few white
put
people
in the sun.
A movie,
right? Except
and
for
they're
those,
like, yeah, they're like, yeah. It's the white man's war. It's the white man's war. We never see the war,
right?
Like, and they're just like arguing and being like, you know, it's all the white men. And I think kind of like keeping the white men as such a small part of the movie, it's Mbene's way of saying like, just do something. Like, I know that they're there, but there's only two of them in this movie.
Right.
Like, do something.
But that's also, I guess, showing the power of, like, that internalized, you know, internalized racism, the psychology, depression, all of that. Yeah.
Internalized racism going on in there.
Yeah, that reminds me, that sort of brings me back to the fact that the sergeant is the guy early in the movie, because it sort of makes it seem like, you know, he has to sacrifice himself to save the elder, and then that kind of comes back upon them. Like, you know, if they had been more willing to kind of embrace resistance in that moment, there's maybe a suggestion that it could have, you know, if they presented a unified front right at that moment, maybe things wouldn't have ended up quite so horribly as they do in the ending. I don't know for sure, though.
I think his point is that they wouldn't have turned on each other at the very least. Like, they maybe their village still would have burned, but they would have, I don't know, burned together, which is preferable in a way.
But y'all help me out. So y'all, so that threw me. Y'all are saying that that guy who they went and got,
yeah,
and came back, he's the sergeant.
Yeah.
All right. So where is his transition from? It's the white man's war. I'm not going to fight in this. Then I come back because they were going to kill my father, and now I'm just like this puppet who does everything you say in this trans. Where's that transit? Like, where's the change?
I kind of like that, actually.
I guess I want to see, how do you, like, change like that? You ran away saying no, like in the room.
Yeah,
I'm escaping.
I felt like it hinted at how powerful they were. Like, okay. Because one of my favorite acting moments in the movie, actually, is at the beginning when he's like, you know, I will not be killed. I'm not going to war. And he's like, mm-hmm, hitting his chest, mm-hmm, and he's like pointing. Right. And he's like, and I was like pretty moved by what he was saying. And then like the next time you see him, he's like, anyways, let's kill everybody.
Yeah.
It's my family. And I was like, damn. And it only took a year.
Right. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And there is that scene where they take all the men to the white captain, I guess is what, mm-hmm, he is. I can't remember what his rank is. The guy with the pith helmet on. He's.
I would help you, but I'm too busy here, guy.
He has that whole speech about, you know, how the, you know, how he says you volunteered for the war, and he's giving them all this kind of rhetoric about it being a glorious thing to go fight, and, mm-hmm, you know, how you'll be serving this higher cause or whatever. And then they just sort of, you know, take them, like march them out of town, and then you have them come back in as like they've transformed him somehow in this, mm-hmm, you know, in this process. And I think that shows a kind of dehumanizing factor in,
okay,
what the French are doing to people in their colonialization. Like, they're sort of filling their head with all these tales of, you know, mm-hmm, war glory, which, you know, has been a a kind of a like sneaky recruiting tool since time immemorial, almost, where it's just,
right,
like it's this myth of like you go to war and you'll be a glorious, mm-hmm, hero, mm-hmm, and,
right,
that's what you're doing it for.
So I was gonna say, like, encouraging participation in this sort of arbitrary hierarchy. Like, he's a sergeant now, so, you know, that puts him above, mm-hmm, people who aren't soldiers,
yeah,
and also soldiers below him. So, like, this idea that once you're a part of war culture,
right,
you know, it's the best thing to do is move up, and how you move up is by following orders. So if he's,
okay,
been fully indoctrinated, it's just an idea that, like, yeah, I mean, maybe these people were important to me now, but right now the real thing is to be on top. It's to be the marshal or, you know,
yeah,
De Gaulle. So the only way I'm going to get there is by doing this.
Yeah,
because he already had like this warrior spirit. So you're saying that they like use that warrior spirit and just, mm-hmm, put it into for their benefit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the process is really interesting. I just don't think that's the movie that Zimbani wanted to make in this one. I think,
mm-hmm,
I hope the other two of them agree with me. If you want to watch a process film, Beau Travail is a really good one about,
oh, yeah,
taking a soldier with kind of humanity and just slowly beating him down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
you see more how it occurs in that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's about like French Foreign Legion, and there's no war going on, and they're just doing activities for no reason in the
okay.
desert for like hours on end.
Right. Okay. Just making movies.
Also, very wry sense of humor.
Yeah.
Similar to this
yeah.
one.
I 100% guarantee you that Claire Denis is influenced by Zimbani.
Yeah.
I believe it, yeah. Because most of her films take place in Africa, don't they?
Well, that's because she was raised in Africa.
Oh, well, yeah.
But,
that too, yeah.
There's a clear line of visual influence. For one thing, like, the
yeah,
fact
that's
that she
true.
Prefers
yeah.
static camera and, like,
mm-hmm.
long shots for a long period of time, which is definitely something that Zimbani does.
That's
and it
true.
Made me kind of
mm-hmm.
sad in this movie that he didn't have like a Steadicam or something, because I know that he doesn't like handheld from his later films. That the handheld shots in this, he probably wanted them to be smoother, but they're still kind of interesting. And it was weird to watch them in one of his films, because you don't normally see like the shaky cam. And I was like, oh, this is pretty emotional for a Zimbani film. Normally he kind of makes you sort of detached and like hard for you to connect to what's going on.
Yeah. And going back to what we were saying about the sort of arbitrary leadership, I think it. That's what's funniest about that scene later when they're putting up the posters of De Gaulle, and they start arguing about which is better, a 2-star general or a 7-star marshal. And they're like, wait a minute, there's this lie of like arbitrary hierarchy that you've been selling us. And now you're telling us that it's meaningless, that this guy has way less stars than this other guy. Like, what, you know, what's the leadership really about here? Like, why, you know, why is this guy better than this guy?
I thought it was funny and sad that where he ends up is, you're lying to me. That's not how the world works. The world works, like, he doesn't end up with, like, oh, this system's bullshit. He's like, oh, you're just wrong. Like, there's no way De Gaulle is in charge.
Right.
Yeah. I did think that was very funny, though.
Yeah.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Yeah, it was. I definitely laughed more at this movie than I was expecting, because I didn't laugh very much at Black Girl or Mulatte. The only part of Mulatte that I laughed at is they, the like plot involves this woman putting up a spell to protect young women from getting a female genital mutilation, and the spell involves like a rope over a door, and like constantly through the film, animals are just jumping over the rope. And somebody is always showing it, and it makes me laugh each and every time that like a goat jumps over the rope, because goats don't care about spells. There are animals in this one, too, and I like them. There was a bunch of pigs running around.
Oh, yeah, the pigs, yeah.
I feel like that's a continued thing in his films, to be like, I don't know if he's, like, privileging animal society, but I think he has kind of, like, a respect for the fact that they're just, like, they don't really care. What, like, these humans are doing, like, crazy shit,
okay,
and, like,
right,
the pigs are just like, I'm gonna go eat now.
Yeah, I'm gonna run around and be a pig. what did you think was the significance of the animal sacrifice that we see, where they sacrifice a chicken and they sacrifice a goat? I thought it was telling that the sacrifices end up being kind of meaningless.
I guess that was why I took that
he was kind of being more cynical about the religion, because he just keeps, you know, sacrificing these animals to the gods so that they'll help, and they never do anything, really. He sacrifices the chicken to help, I think it's Jamadi, I think is his name, the chieftain of the village, to help him get better, and then he, like, dies immediately after that. And then they sacrifice the goat to, I can't remember exactly what they sacrificed that for, but it was to help them in some way.
So that they can hold the funeral.
They can't even
do something else to appease the gods.
And they can't even get that done. So
To me, the meaningful part about those sacrifices is that after they poured the blood on the horns, they just threw the animal in a hole. There was something really, you know,
very
emotional.
Yeah, I would say it was very callous.
Callous is the word that I'm looking for about that. And it was just like, dump.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, you're done. And I was like, well, that animal's like, still, like, struggling, dying.
To me, there was, like, a part of that that they were saying, like, are you really doing this sacrifice? Are you really caring? If, like, you're not even thinking about the animal you're taking, you're just like, save us, cutthroat, throw away.
Yeah.
But I guess with that also, that it's the, like we talk about in class, it's the blood that's important.
Yeah.
As far as actual sacrifice.
But
so
like,
after I have the blood and I put it on the altar, then I don't need to do it.
Yeah, not that I know that much about animal sacrifice, but normally there's a, like, at least in Jewish text, there's a culture of stuff you do before you sacrifice
before
the animal.
It, right.
Like pour water on it and stuff like that and bless it and pray to God that he'll, you know, accept your sacrifice. And in this case, it was just like, gut, throat, gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And there was like, there was no sort of ritual with the ritual. It was just like, get me out of this place.
Okay.
Yeah. I do agree with that. I think one of the, in any culture, like the thing behind the sacrifice is that it actually has to be a sacrifice to you. Like, it has to be an animal that you have raised and valued. That's the reason it's a sacrifice, is because it's something of great value to you. And these guys are basically just like, we don't care about this chicken. Let's just kill this chicken and see if that'll help us, you know?
Yeah.
We've just got these expendable animals here that we don't, that aren't helping us at all. It's another form of,
that, you know, ties into what I felt, which is that he wasn't saying throw away religion, but he's saying there's something wrong with how you're treating it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then maybe like a last, like desperate attempt to appease the God, you know, like do something. The God's angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going back to the ending. I was going to say that I thought I did a really good job of sort of subverting my expectations, because there's a way in which the narrative of this movie is like super tense. Like, I feel like from a Hollywood, like, conventional narrative perspective, it seems like stuff keeps building up and building up, and you feel like it's gonna, at some point, they're gonna, like, revolt and actually, like, kill these guys. Like, that's, like, the way that this narrative usually plays out, and the fact that it ends the way it does with, like, their resistance being dying rather than killing them is sort of really, like, upset my expectation, because I was like, especially when it shows, like, all the women with the spears, I'm like, all right, the women are going to go get this done. They're going to, like, kill all these guys or something. And then that it doesn't end that way, I think, is really makes the ending even more powerful or more affecting because of the way it sets up what could be, like, a pretty conventional closing.
Yeah, I was looking for the conventional piece, too, like, with the overthrow and the revolt. But then, looking at all the scenes up to that point, I was like, nah, that's not going to happen. Yeah. Like, all the interacting, like, how would they do it? And I was like, where are they going to get it from?
It would have kind of let you off the hook, too, don't you think? Like, if they had revolted, because then, the type of people who are watching this movie are probably people who are not very racist. So, but it still would have let them off the hook a little bit to be like, yeah, we watched this movie and we cheered on the good black people and they, you know, they either won or they lost a noble battle. And to, like, pat yourself on the back, whereas at the end of it, it's to just be like, man, life sucks. This just sucks.
But there's a flip side, though, depending on the lens, I could see some of my hardcore, like, black nationalist friends saying, like, I mean, I wanted to see a movie at the end where black folks resisted and they won. We can never win.
Yeah.
They were singing and they died. Black folks singing, black folks got shot. Really?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, I feel what you're saying.
It's like that ad for Dear White People.
Some folks
want to
see that. Right. Yeah.
That's like one of my favorite parts of the movie. It's like
I know folks who say, like, you can never see enough black folks winning. And the African shooting the European and them dying. You can't never see enough of that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I don't know.
One of the many reasons why I like Django Unchained is Jamie Foxx shooting like 1,000 racists.
At one time.
And then riding away on a horse while the house behind him explodes. I said that if they, you know, make new Batman films, that I want Jamie Foxx to be Batman. I don't care what racist people think. I want Jamie Foxx to beat up white villains for hours on end.
That would be awesome.
And no voice. I wanted to just talk like Jamie Foxx.
Yeah. He would have been a 100% better choice than Ben Affleck.
Just take all the millions from Annie and invest them in an awesome suit.
Awesome.
Can I look at this see if I wanted to go back to any of these points?
One small thing, I sort of wondered whether or not the movie was actually, because I couldn't find any information, it's just like a technical detail, whether or not it was shot in 133 or just like the copy we got is like a shitty TV version or something.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, because it's cut off.
It seems like the original was shot in film.
He's talking about
just based on the color. No, but I'm saying like film is like cheap film is usually 1x33. That's why I'm guessing that it might be that like 16mm film is usually not widescreen. And I'm just basing guessed on the color detail that it was shot in film originally. Which would make me
guess. I figured, I mean, it's too early for video probably, but, you know.
La Noire d'Eau was 133, wasn't it?
I believe so.
But it's also black and white. I guess I'm just not used to seeing color film that's also 133.
But there's a really good color 16mm scene in Paris, Texas.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it would depend on what was available in Senegal at the time, too.
We talked about that pretty good.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I had any other points. I liked it aesthetically, which was like kind of, it was a little bit surprising. one of the things that I liked most about the editing, or like how the story started, was that it really trusted you to like stay with it. Like it didn't hold your hand. It was like, okay, like the first scene is like they grab some people and they like take them into like a woods area, and you're like, all right, what's going on here? And then they're like, and you're like, don't know. And then they're like, your son ran away. It's like, go get him. I'm like, okay, I know a little bit more now. And then these women just run away, and I'm like, where are they going?
Why?
And then the guy's there, and they're like, and then it's like, oh, that's the son or something. And then it's like 1 year later, and I was like, man, I just caught up on the story. Now you're gonna jump 1 year later, and now I don't know what's going on again. I thought that was a nice thing about the way that the story was structured and the way that it was edited. That you see so many films, they like spend the first 2 minutes explaining to you everything you need to know about the film after that. It was nice not to be treated like an imbecile.
Right. And I know Ruben told you, I'm watching the unsubtitled for the first 20 minutes, thinking y'all are just like so smart that y'all know French or y'all can view films without it. So I'm like, I can do this. So I'm looking at it, I'm trying to figure, I didn't know what the hell's going on, like where the girl's going, why they running. So yeah, it brought some things together. I'm like, man.
Yeah, we couldn't get it to work on Dr. Jameson's computer, so we just watched it on mine.
Nice.
Does anyone have anything else that they want to say about this movie? I feel pretty good about what I've said.
I feel good.
Yeah, I'm good.
You didn't have any more notes, Basil? Didn't seem like you talked.
I mean, I have a ton of notes, but they're all just like random stuff. It's not really worth it. Getting back into the groove. Just
Well, say your most important one, and we'll see if it kicks off more than 20 seconds of discussion.
Dead child.
Yeah. I mean, I saw that coming in the movie, but I was still like, I think that's something that I always appreciate in a movie when I know something is coming and that it still hits me anyways. Like, those children kept coming back and forth, and then that guy was like, shoot anyone who moves. And I was like, okay, one of those children is going to get shot. Like, right. I just knew that as soon as he said that. And then when the shot rang out, I was like, ah, damn, I was hoping I was wrong.
I will say that a funny thing that I thought of was, like, I can't remember there ever being a white man in a pith helmet in a movie and it not being something really bad. Like, anytime you see a white dude in a pith helmet, like, something racist is probably happening in that movie.
You were right on that. I was flipping the channel the other day. I didn't think they even had them anymore. I was flipping the channel, and I saw two of them dudes. And next thing you know, here came the Africans. And there was a pot, and they were trying to put them in the pot. So, nah, you're right on that. That is a sign of racism is right around the corner.
I watched Jumanji last night, and there was a guy with a pith helmet in that. I don't know if that movie is explicitly racist. I feel like the monkeys are kind of awful in that movie in a way that seems like a bad version of the Gremlins without the subtext.
Yeah, that's a good point though. The uniform, what uniform does oppression come in? There's some uniforms that go with it sometimes, you know? Yeah.
I don't know. There might be something there with David Alan Grier's character. Because he's like, they call him...
Oh, yeah, there's definitely, like, some racism with that, too. He invented the
sneakers.
Sneaker?
Yeah.
Dang.
Like, they call him the soul man, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I've not seen that movie since I was 12, I think.
Yeah. That could have been my other denouncement, but I decided to kick it hard.
Right.
Instead of go soft.
I go after like 20-year-old Robin Williams movies.
Yeah. I guess that would still be kicking it hard a little bit.
I mean,
recently.
My denouncement.
Right, because you can't say anything bad about him, right? Okay.
I was gonna say my denouncement was Hook. So
yeah,
I would have also.
Yeah, we could add two Robin Williams. It's
just kicking Robin Williams now. Sorry, Robin Williams.
Just to jump back a little bit, I was really moved by the way that the other kid reacted when his friend or brother was killed, and the fact that like he just like instantly moved into mourning in a way that I thought was, it like I guess it signaled to me that he was prepared for it on a level that made me deeply sad.
Okay, yeah.
Like, you know, I feel like the typical movie when something bad happens, there's always like a moment of like denial of like what happened in American movies. They're like, you're joking, you're lying, blah, blah, blah. And he was just like, my friend's dead, time to gather the funeral people. And I was like, shit.
Right. Yeah.
Just, this life sucks.
Yeah. But he responded well, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't have handled it that well. Yeah. I probably would have ran on one of the soldiers and got myself killed.
Right.
Yeah. And there again was that, like, decisiveness on the part of the women. Like, as soon as it happens, they're, like, carrying him, like, carrying his body off to Demorna. Like, they're not sitting around arguing about whether or not they can do it, or like the men do. Like, the men sit around for like 10 minutes. They're like, I don't know, we can't bury this guy properly. Right. We can't do it right. The women are just like, we'll do what we can.
This is a pro women of color podcast, despite my not liking the movie so much.
Right.
You're on dicey ground for a little bit, but
I've hopefully reestablished my ally-ness. I don't want to get thrown in the hashtag not all men.
Oh god.
Okay, this is a good podcast, I think. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm glad
you
invited me. This
Dr.
is good.
Jameson.
Yeah.
You're
y'all
great.
Cool
people.
Glad I met y'all.
Yeah,
thanks.
Definitely welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
On any other podcast that you want to participate in. And, you know, if you enjoyed listening to the podcast, please, you know, give us a good rating, give us a good review, subscribe on iTunes, and we will see you next time. Bye.
I don't know why I'm waving. They can't see me.
Oh, we always wave.
No. I mean, people on the podcast.